these companies are actually the ones that are providing the outperformance, or these are the ones that are providing the positive return for the S&P 500. The rest of the index is still there, but it's just kind of meh, you know? So we're seeing a very, very small pocket, funnily enough, all technology companies, all being enhanced by AI. And so this new wealth and the new world that we're seeing seems to always revolve around technology.
The New Zealand Tech Podcast, brought to you by Gorilla Technology, proactive and strategic IT.
Greetings and welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Spain. And today we're delving into the sort of crossover between the investment and the technology worlds, looking at AI, Bitcoin, and a whole bunch of other topics. This episode, we have Darcy Ungaro joining us as our guest. He's a financial advisor and a podcast host. Welcome along, Darcy. How are you?
Hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks very much for having me on. I'm good.
Great to have you on. Maybe a quick intro for our listeners to yourself.
Sure. So by day, I'm a financial advisor. I help people with their everyday products like mortgages, insurances, KiwiSaver, and also just offering fee-based consulting service, financial advice. And then, yeah, at night or in the afternoons occasionally, I am the host of the Everyday Investor Podcast, where we talk about mainstream investing and alternative strategies as well.
Fantastic. Well, looking forward to diving into this chat with you today. Cool. Before we start, a big thank you to our show partners, 1NZ, 2 Degrees, Spark, HP, and Gorilla Technology. Now, this episode we're doing as a joint episode between the New Zealand Tech Podcast and Everyday Investor. So I'm going to hand over the reins for you to steer the discussion this time around, Darcy.
Yeah, it kind of feels like going to the dentist and just grabbing a hold of the tools and just saying, oh, I'll have a go this time. Hopefully we can make it quick and painless. But you're someone that's been on my mind probably for the last few weeks as I've been trying to get my head around artificial intelligence and its general impact around like the performance of publicly listed companies. I want to know if it's just hype or if there is really something tangible, something substantial that's actually happening because of the implementation of this technology. So just like at a general level, being someone who's very much involved in technology and serving the business community with tech advice, you would probably understand a lot about how businesses implement and use technology at a micro level anyway. And I thought that would be a good sort of point to look at to understand what it might look like at a much larger scale with a publicly listed company. So just general thoughts around how AI is amplifying the performance of these tech businesses.
Well, I think there's a lot of speculation around what the future holds. And it's right that we should be thinking ahead and trying to join up the dots as to, you know, what does the future look like? What should we do now so that we benefit out of where technology can take us, you know, whether that's in the days or weeks ahead or months, years, and decades ahead. And so if you look to some of the companies in NVIDIA, you know, it's probably one of the most exciting in terms of its growth. They're a business that has built the chips that are being used for a lot of the AI workloads from, you know, varying companies, the likes of, you know, OpenAI, Microsoft, Tesla, and so on. There are other companies making chips, but their ones seem to be the most in demand and the best product right now. And often, you know, that's something that will continue on for a long period of time. And now if we sort of, you know, step back a little bit, say, well, okay, well, all of these companies are buying lots of chips right now, but will they still need to be doing that in a year's time or 5 or 10 years time? And this is where the speculation often comes into investment. And why, you know, from my perspective, why we, you know, we talk about investing in the share market, not being investing, but, you know, but being gambling, because there's so much that we don't know. And, you know, each of us, we have to make the, you know, those calls around, you know, where we think things will go. And look, that those longer term pictures are, you know, probably, you know, pretty hard to get a handle on exactly what's going to happen. And sometimes there are very unexpected things that will happen with a business. Sometimes things are just, you know, predictable, and, you know, you'll get a particular, you know, curve that can be pretty sort of steep in the growth of a particular company. And it continues on that trajectory. And if you look back at, you know, at the really big successful sort of tech stocks, you will see, you know, most of them have some, you know, pretty impressive growth over time, where at one point they were, you know, you'd look at their, you know, I guess they've gone through multiple stock splits and so on. And when you look at them over, you know, over a long period of time, they've just grown and grown and grown, and they keep growing. But we do see, you know, we do see exceptions to that. And some companies are very, very much tied up in one or two products. So yeah, how AI sort of fits in for different companies, you know, I think if you were to look at those top tech stocks and try and get your head around exactly where each one of them can be, you know, it is very much a sort of, you know, a matter of sort of speculating as to how things might line up, and, you know, which companies are going to do well. You know, in many ways, you want to be probably looking out for those that nobody else has recognized yet, where there's an opportunity for, you know, AI to really, really make the difference, right? So I'm speaking at a conference, possibly before this is published, for people in your field, financial advisors, and I'm talking through, you know, some of the aspects of AI. Now, you know, one of my comments is that, you know, look, you know, everybody involved in this space has an opportunity to get in and to start using AI, you know, themselves as individuals, as small, you know, small advisory firms. But there will be the big players that will come through as well. And, you know, most people have you know, heard of in New Zealand and probably, you know, noticed, you know, the growth of, say, Sharesies. You know, this is a company that's been able to come about because of certain bits and pieces of technology, and, you know, they've built a momentum and done very well. I imagine we're going to see, you know, completely new, different businesses that will come in and and do, you know, potentially do something like what they've done, but it's very much, you know, say AI investment or other, you know, other things that are just using AI to be able to do so much better than, you know, some of the old options and offerings. And then in other cases, we'll see, you know, it might be Sharesies that applies AI and positions themselves, you know, as a leader by bringing together their existing tech and AI, or it might be, you know, completely new players. So there's a lot of ways that these things can play out.
Mm-hmm. And you look at the legacy businesses that, like I was just thinking when you were saying that before, there, it's one thing to look at these technology companies that are already in the business of tech and just seeing how AI can amplify what they're already doing. But like you say, like I wonder if the real opportunity is in looking at legacy business structures that still depend on old school administrative functions or even physical things that don't necessarily require a high degree of accuracy, but they are just physical, moving things around. Like I'm thinking of Optimus, Tesla's Optimus, and I've been watching videos of this android robot that is just walking around doing stuff. And like, I could imagine that if you had enough money and you just filled a warehouse full of these things, you got them folding shirts in no time, right? Pretty expensive shirts, mind you. But as time goes on, the cost of those machines can effectively get to zero eventually over time, and it's really just power that we're dealing with. And then ultimately we get to a place way off in the future where energy effectively is the raw commodity for everything, and the actual labor is completely replaced by robots. But that's probably way too far down the line. But maybe the opportunity, though, coming back to this, is really just in legacy businesses that do require some manual input from somebody either doing an administrative function or simple laborious tasks, right?
Yeah, look, I think there's opportunities there. The challenge often for some organizations is that pivot, is that change? If they've been very slow moving organizations, how do you change from being a very, you know, a very slow to change organization into one that moves at a pace? And, you know, I think that there's been, you know, a fair bit of, you know, discussion over what the rest of the auto industry, you know, can and will achieve when it comes to electric vehicles, autonomous vehicles, you know, being much more sort of, you know, software defined, I suppose. And yeah, I'm still hearing things, you know, today, and these conversations have been probably going on for, you know, between 5 and 10 years. I'm still hearing, you know, commentary today from people within that sector who are saying, oh, Tesla's still 5 years ahead of other players. And how could anybody make that when everything they've been doing has been out in the open for, you know, for so many years? Everyone's seen their share price, their market cap, you know, grow to where they're worth more than the next few, you know, automakers combined. And, you know, the only things that you can kind of look to, you know, are the people and you know, how they work inside that business, and that they're actually iterating and doing things faster, or that it's a complete lie and they're going nowhere and they're going to fail. And, you know, I guess my bets wouldn't be on that on that second option. So, yeah, there's some really interesting things sort of, you know, tied up in terms of how businesses operate, how agile they are, you know, and the ability to sort of change and maneuver. And look, for some of those things, you need a lot of money. So, you know, the ability to tap into, you know, venture capital or existing revenue streams, you know, can be helpful. But then you get other firms that you know, they get huge amounts of money from venture capital, and they just burn through it all and don't actually achieve the results. So, you know, there's a lot of this that comes down to the people and the leadership and the methodologies that they follow. And, you know, I imagine there's a fair bit of luck in there. But the companies that do well over the long term seem to figure out how to make their luck and how to keep, you know, keep making it. I mean, look at Apple. If they hadn't come up with the iPhone, where would Apple be, you know, right now? And you know, look, if they'd decided to go in another direction or hadn't made the tilts and the pivots that they made, you know, you know, and it was, you know, back in the 90s when they were out looking for handouts, and, you know, Microsoft, you know, helped them get up off the floor because they were struggling. But, you know, look at them now. They're
And actually, Apple's a great example, right, of how to change, how to pivot, how to know when to, I guess, fold them, right, or when to go again, because they pulled out of that. I don't know how many billion dollars it was, $8, $9, $10 billion, this not failed but shut down EV project. Like, that's an example that they were more than willing to change and ready to pivot yet again, get into the EV manufacturing business, so much so that they threw their capital behind it. They pivoted, they got into it, and then they pulled out. And like, that just blows me away that they would actually invest that much and not get stuck into the mindset that a lot of people get stuck into when they're renovating their homes, which is, oh my goodness, this costs like 20 times more than I thought. I'm just going to pull out now. We don't do that at an individual layer, but they did at a very large level.
Well, Dr. Dyson did something similar. So, you know, I followed with interest Dyson because they've been an incredibly innovative company. You know, I struggle at times with looking at, you know, how much you pay for some of their products versus the, you know, the other offerings in the market, but they differentiate themselves, you know, so well. And I was really curious where they were going with their electric vehicles, and you know, they pulled the plug on that too, with not the same level of investment, I don't believe, as Apple put in, you know, but it was a very significant investment. Now, the other area we probably haven't touched on is where does the money get made? You know, you talked about this, you know, thing where you know, ultimately it's down to the power, everything sort of commoditized. And you know, that is one of the things. If you can sort of, you know, predict when, hey, there's you know, 5 or 10 different chip makers that are, you know, that are all able to do somewhat sort of similar things, and then they're competing on, you know, on price. Well, then the money doesn't get made in that space. And so, yeah, it's kind of, you know, working out where those opportunities are, and they will vary according to, you know, to different times. And, you know, as you rightly highlight, you know, there will be, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, existing established firms that will be able to maybe sprinkle some AI dust on what they're doing, and will change their fortunes. There'll be others that try to do that and are just too slow and don't achieve it. But often it is those startups that come through, you know, they're agile, you know, they just get on, they move fast, they bring in the right sort of people, they have the right mindset from the get-go, and they nail things, and they, you know, they become the next, you know, NVIDIA, the next Tesla, the next, you know, Apple. Because of that. And then you'll see the, I guess, what, you know, what we often see with these big firms is the acquisitions, right? And, you know, one of Apple's acquisitions over the last, you know, decade or so was buying a chip maker so they can make their own silicon, make their own chips, and weren't so reliant on the Intels and NVIDIAs and so on of this world. That was a, you know, a reasonably low cost acquisition for them. But, you know, in the long run, you know, it would be very interesting to know what the, you know, the multiple return was on the, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that they threw into that one. And it would be a phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal return, but also a great win for, you know, for that company too, who was, you know, probably reasonably obscure at the time.
Yeah. And so thinking now, like zooming out and just looking at the investment universe, we're talking here at the beginning of March. It's a fascinating time just generally. If you zoom out and you think about the last 3 to 4 years, and you think about kind of what happened since March 2020, a lot of quantitative easing, a lot of new currency creation through central banks and governments with responding the way they did. And then that sends shockwaves and create some pockets of growth and then some pockets of zombies, I guess you could say. But in the, like, just taking a snapshot, if we were to look at a dashboard of what the investable universe looks like right now, currently we have the S&P 500, which is an index, 500 companies in that index that you can invest in all in one go. That just hit 5,150 for the first time in history. So we're at an all-time high with the S&P 500. About, I don't know, I think it's like 20 to 30% of that, though, is what we call the Magnificent Seven. And these are the seven companies of which Apple, Amazon, NVIDIA, Tesla, did I say Microsoft already? Microsoft, Meta, yeah. Alphabet. You know, these are the companies. These companies are actually the ones that are providing the outperformance, or these are the ones that are providing the positive return for the S&P 500. The rest of the index is still there, but it's just kind of meh, you know? That's interesting, though. So we're seeing a very, very small pocket, funnily enough, all technology companies, all being enhanced by AI. And so this new wealth and the new world that we're seeing seems to always revolve around technology. And an NFT, just in other news, just sold for $16 million, the second highest price ever. Now, it wasn't that long ago, I think, Paul, where you and I were probably talking about NFTs maybe two, three years ago or so, and it was all the thing. Most of us probably would have just written it off and thought, no, that'll never come back again. But we just had a $16 million sale. And then gold, not that that's technology. In fact, that's probably anti-technology. That's only 1% away from trading at all-time highs. And then finally, what I really wanted to pick your brains on is Bitcoin, about 3% away from all-time highs. I think it's like 60... like right now, it's just under $69,000. I think it has to get close to $78,000 to get to a new real all-time high in U.S. dollars to account for inflation. But this kind of goes right back to what you were saying around how willing these businesses are to change, to adapt AI into their business models. We've seen a massive pivot with Bitcoin. Huge. Not in price. Forget about the price for a second. But we've seen a massive pivot in terms of people's perspective at a very, very high level. Larry Fink. I'm not sure. Are you familiar with Larry Fink? Are you and Larry friends by any chance?
No, I haven't spent any time hanging out with Larry. Mr. Fink. But yeah, I mean, I guess we've got, you know, big names out there. What's he? Chief executive of BlackRock, which is the big fund. And maybe you can, for the uninitiated, you know, walk them through why firms like BlackRock exist. And of course, we often hear the BlackRock sort of name come up these days that you and I might not necessarily be on the same page with. But, you know, these names sort of get bandied around and people are maybe quite concerned about the role that they play in the world today. But I think you can probably break that down for us because it's reasonably simple in some ways, although there is a lot of power that these sort of companies have too.
Yeah, and it was similar to what we were talking about before, another episode that we did with regards to Peter Thiel building that amazing underground mansion. And if you could, why wouldn't you, right? So here we have Larry Fink, who is in charge of this massive behemoth called BlackRock. I can't even remember how many trillion dollars worth of funds it manages, but a fund manager is a corporation, I guess you could say, that takes money from investors and invests it on their behalf. So as an investor in a BlackRock fund, you own units in a fund and that fund goes out there and it acquires the actual investments on your behalf. It just so happens that Larry Fink is quite entrenched with the World Economic Forum as well. And recently there was a lot of positive murmurings around Bitcoin from the World Economic Forum, specifically around energy usage. And if you go back in time, maybe about 1 or 2 years really, Bitcoin was getting some pretty bad press around its power consumption. And there was a lot of negative news out there. And it seemed to kind of hit the media all at the same time. FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt is what we call it. And it was interesting because right at the very top at the World Economic Forum, they were railing against the energy consumption of Bitcoin. Funnily enough, Larry Fink wasn't a fan of Bitcoin at the time either. And now there seems to be a massive pivot where BlackRock now is one of the providers where effectively without BlackRock, a lot of investors wouldn't be able to get into Bitcoin right now. So BlackRock is one of the providers of one of the Bitcoin ETFs or exchange traded funds. And
this is the way that it makes it very, very easy for people to invest in Bitcoin without actually having to know, you know, anything about it and you know, the complexities that have maybe existed in the past. It's just, you know, treated like buying stocks or anything else, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so you now have this mainstream wrapper around this alternative asset. That's what an ETF is. It's just a wrapper that makes it more tolerable for people on their Sharesies or Hatch app to just jump in there and go, cool, I'm going to buy that fund today, thanks. And there's a few of them out there. So since the beginning of January, there was, I think, nine or so that launched at that stage, and it's been going from strength to strength, where the net inflows coming into these Bitcoin ETFs, in other words, the amount of people that are putting money into these ETFs, and then these funds like BlackRock have to go out and buy the Bitcoin now, that's putting so much buying pressure into the exchanges that, well, there's effectively somewhere between 10 to 20 times more buying going on than the amount of Bitcoin that's being mined and or created. And that's going to then half as well. The amount that's being mined is going to half in less than 100 days. And there's a mounting speculation that what we've seen with this nearing $70,000 Bitcoin price is just the tip of the iceberg. And so it's just fascinating, though, that you take one person involved with traditional finance, like Larry Fink, a little bit of a pivot, and that can send massive shockwaves through the entire ecosystem. And it's just sent Bitcoin off to the moon, basically. So yeah, like it's fascinating. I don't know where you sit with Bitcoin. I know we've been talking about it, Paul, probably since I started doing the podcast, because I think one of the first podcasts I did was around Bitcoin, and that kind of really opened my eyes. And I remember talking to you shortly after that show thinking that was that the right thing to do? And I think you mentioned that I probably lost at least one of my two viewers at the time who thought that they didn't really agree with my open-mindedness on Bitcoin way back then. But I want to know how open-minded you are, Paul. Are you a Bitcoiner yet? Have you been orange-pilled permanently yet?
Look, I mean, you know, for me, you know, I guess most of my kind of investment has been into my own, you know, own business and sort of, you know, having a house and things like that, right? But you know, Bitcoin has certainly, you know, caught my attention. And you know, I think there's this general mindset that the world is likely to be, you know, continue going down a digital path. And that's really where, you know, technologies or you know, from an investor point, assets like, you know, Bitcoin, you know, you need to look at it through that lens of a world that is increasingly, you know, more digital. The idea of using sort of, you know, paper money and coins as and checks, banknotes, you know, that's, you know, those are becoming things of the past, depending on where you are in the world and so on. And look, you know, some people are pretty uncomfortable about those sort of changes, but look, I think we're going in a digital direction. And you know, what does that mean? Well, you know, there'll be some good sides to it, there'll be some bad sides, but for digital currencies, which is where Bitcoin sits, it seems reasonably unlikely that in the long term that's not going to keep, you know, keep rising. And particularly because there are these technological aspects to it that you mentioned, in terms of there's a fixed supply. We have this the halving that's coming up that plays into that. So you know, it's like everything else, it's sort of speculative. You know, we don't know everything that might happen. We've certainly seen bad things happen, you know, when it comes to cryptocurrencies, because of big players sort of falling over and not being, you know, established on good foundations. If you wanted to pick how well a company like BlackRock would be handling their Bitcoin cryptocurrency type of investments, you would like to think that they've done it in a super secure way, that there, you know, there isn't some easy way for somebody to sort of hack in and steal their funds. But you know, you can't know for sure how these things are gonna, you know, are gonna play out, and there is some complexity to it. But it's certainly no big surprise to me. I'm just looking now, you know, $112,000 New Zealand dollars is the price of a Bitcoin today. So you know, if we compare that to where we were a year ago, what are we up 210%? This is very, very significant. And of course, on the flip side, because we have seen these things fall back, you know, down in the past, there are some interesting sort of potential consequences. In fact, I think if we look at the current price today, because of where New Zealand's, you know, dollar is trading, this is the highest that Bitcoin has ever been in history. If you're a New Zealand investor looking at things from a New Zealand dollar lens,
if you're looking at it from almost every currency, we're at all-time highs, not necessarily adjusted for inflation. That's the only other thing that we gotta, that's the next milestone. But that says something about the strength of the US dollar, which is also interesting because that's connected to a lot of stuff that's probably beyond the scope of this episode. But going back to what you were saying though, right at the very start of this episode, when we were talking about NVIDIA creating chips, right? A lot of uncertainty investing in any growth company because there's so many things that haven't yet come to fruition. And so you are taking a risk when you're investing for growth like this, right? Like, for example, maybe there is an Optimus robot is starting to make chips now, and it's infinitely cheaper and faster than it ever has been before. And it just, I don't know, I'm just making this stuff up and I don't know anything about robots.
You are, but I, you know, I take the point. There's always, you know, a lot of unknown aspects.
Yeah.
And look, nobody can tell you what Bitcoin or virtually any other investment will do tomorrow with complete accuracy all the time. Like, some people are going to get it right, you know, some of the time. Sometimes things do seem, you know, more obvious in terms of where they're heading. And I recall at one point making a change to my mortgage based on all the wisdom was that the rates were going to go in a particular direction and it was going down. And, you know, there was so much evidence sort of pointing in that direction that I made a particular change and it made a, you know, a big difference to be thinking ahead and taking action. So, you know, I think a lot of life is about thinking ahead and planning, putting on our futurist hats and planning for the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, nobody can tell you exactly what that is, but, you know, you should make the best calls that you can. And, you know, in New Zealand, a lot of our investment has been into real estate. I don't know how long that sort of stays. We're, you know, such a, the average cost of a home now in terms of multiplier versus incomes is so much higher than what it was when I entered the workforce. You know, you do have to wonder, you know, at what point does that stop? And so, yeah, it's there's always been this wisdom when it comes to investment of diversifying. So, you know, the idea of things that tie into technology being good places to invest, that goes well with me.
Yeah, well, of course it does. Well, and on the topic of being a futurist, I just want to get your take on this perhaps before we bring it in for a landing. You mentioned property, another great example of a finite asset. Sort of, more or less. Yep. I guess you could always go up, right? But more or less, property is a finite asset. And when we buy a property, we're trading something which is infinite for something which is finite, much like you would with Bitcoin, right? You're trading something which is infinite, our New Zealand dollars, to something that's finite, Bitcoin, digital scarcity. So the reason, though, why it's infinite is something that's seldom discussed with investing, I think. And we often focus on the flavors, like different types of sweetness, without considering where that sweetness comes from. It's actually sugar, and it's currency debasement. Ultimately, first and foremost, in my view, that's what creates the so-called wealth or the price appreciation in what we invest in. Because when you're buying property, sometimes you're borrowing as well. So you're shorting the New Zealand dollar. You're getting rid of the thing that's going down in value to acquire the thing that's going up in value. But it's often not something that we think about. So think of putting your futurist hat on, without asking you to be an economics expert at all. But if you were to think, right, 5 years, maybe even go all the way up to, say, 2030, what does it look like, Paul, in 2030 as it relates to what we can own in the future? So thinking property or our investments, do you see a future which is pretty much like what we have today, just linearly a little bit different? Or do you see something that's exponentially different?
Look, there's lots of different knobs that can, you know, probably be turned by different people to impact, you know, how the future, you know, actually plays out. And there's different forms of government, different types of government, and different decisions that can be made. Although, you know, if you look more broadly, the world does tend to, you know, travel in a particular direction together. Yeah, and in terms of how these things you know, play out over that longer term, I guess there's some aspects of that sort of scare me a little bit. You know, if property prices kind of keep going where they have done over the longer term, what does that mean? Do you know, can we afford to own anything? But then, you know, if you're investing in that, are you investing for the return on the value going up? Or is the rent worth anything? You know, I think if we look at startups, often, you know, those that have invested in startups and have, you know, have made some of the biggest money, it hasn't necessarily been off those startups, you know, profitability. It's that other people want to jump in and to buy that stock. So, you know, the valuations, you know, keep going up. Then we kind of have to also throw in, well, what does this sort of access to, you know, low cost technology sort of mean for us in the future? You know, how does that play out with technology? If you could be based anywhere, but you could get to, you know, a city location in a very short period of time because you've got, say, autonomous electric, you know, air taxis, for example, if that can get you from A to B very quickly. We had, you know, one of my team today, understand took them 2 hours to get to work through the Auckland you know, traffic. If we look at, you know, robotics and automation, you know, can the cost of houses be brought down when we kind of, you know, look at the raw elements? We look at the, you know, the costs of steel, wood and other things. Will that change as the technology improves? You know, can we make things, you know, safer for less? So in terms of easy answers, I'm not sure I can give you an easy answer on on that one, you know, Darcy. We are one of the other play-in facts, of course, as you know, what happens with population in different different countries. I think it was, you know, Bernard Hickey was sort of suggesting if we keep a somewhat similar trajectory to what, you know, we've had over maybe the last, you know, 20 years, we keep that going, you know, we'd end up with a New Zealand population, I think it was in the direction of sort of 16, 17 mm-hmm. million, mm-hmm. you know, by the end of the century. You know, is that catastrophic or not? Well, you look at the UK, which I think is probably, you know, a bit smaller than New Zealand, you know, and then north of 50 million people. But there's all sorts of other, you know, changes for these things to work. Mm. So,
yeah,
I would love to sort of give you a really confident answer on, yep, things are going to, you know, change exponentially in this direction or that direction. Look, I think you're a futurist in your own right with your thinking, and you probably give a better, maybe a more shocking answer than I might do. I do tend to sort of lean in on the positive that, you know, if we're astute as we go through these things, that, you know, hopefully as society, you know, from individuals right through to, you know, at government levels and I guess in the, you know, at a global sort of levels, you know, that we would make, you know, good decisions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking for. And partly why I think it's important to have these discussions, so that we can see maybe where we are going off track and where we could be creating, you know, catastrophes for society, that we figure some of those things out, and we make the better calls, and we call out the things that are, you know, that are really big issues.
Yeah. Well, humans are problem solvers, right? That's what gives me hope, is that we're problem solvers. It's just that occasionally we get stuck solving the wrong problems. So as long as we're solving the right problems, I'm pretty optimistic generally. And so, like, you, just to finish up on you, you generally optimistic about the future, Paul?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's good. The future's so bright, you're going to get the progressive lenses installed here.
Hey, when I was a youngster, I used to wear yellow lenses in my glasses.
Oh, I can see you with mixing and scratching. Yeah, definitely. Awesome. All right. Well, that was a good chat. Thank you. I've definitely come away with some things that I probably wasn't thinking about before, like just the opportunity with legacy businesses implementing AI, for example, and just like the future being more digital. Like there's layers of stuff here that I think could probably provide a good platform for further discussion as well. But yeah, I really appreciate your time. Thanks, Paul. It's good.
Yeah, my pleasure. Look, you know, I think that the encouragement for, you know, for everybody should be, as we should all be looking at AI now, we should look at, you know, what is its role in our own lives. You know, we should be talking to our family members around, you know, the role of technology and AI and what they do. I just heard a stat actually, and I, you know, I didn't have all the details of the source and so on, but it was talking about those who bring you know, technology expertise into their role, the average uplift that brings to their earning potential apparently is a 30% uplift. Wow. Compared to colleagues who haven't doubled down and learned and understood you know, how they can utilize technology and AI and what they do. And I think that number could, you know, could grow, you know, considerably in an AI world for those that understand how to leverage AI, you know, even just their own businesses.
Like even just employees, right? Are you talking about business owners or just even just employees?
Employees, yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah.
So this is like this is a good future. So we should probably go out there and just get amongst it rather than wait and see what happens and kind of be skeptical, right? This isn't something that you want to sit back and just wait on the sidelines for, right?
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, great chat. Thanks, Paul. And we'll catch you in the next one.
Great. Well, thanks, Darcy. It's been great to do this sort of flipped New Zealand Tech podcast episode and to have you leading the way.
Confusing that way. Like, am I the host or am I the hostie? I don't know. Hopefully people aren't.
So, keen to hear from listeners. If you enjoyed this episode and would like more of these sorts of things, love to hear from you. You know, definitely get in touch. And a big thank you to our show partners, Guerrilla Technology, HP, 2 Degrees, Spark, and 1NZ.
the New Zealand Tech Podcast, brought to you by Guerrilla Technology, proactive and strategic IT.